Hello? Hello? Can anybody hear me? I can't hear anybody. And I've got my sound on. In fact, I'm hoping they hear me because I can't hear them. But if only somebody could hear me, I'm unmuted. Turn your sound.
Unfortunately, I've decided that if I really, really can't hear this meeting, it's not going to be that critical. But thank you.
Okay. Try it now.
Okay. And I'll try to pop it louder if I sound like I'm yelling. That's the reason.
Hi, Doug.
My name is Doug Moore. I'm here representing Franklin Township. Some of you may remember I served on this very board, and I can't remember in any time that I've been in Story County that we did not welcome public comment on a topic either off the agenda at the early stage of the meeting or on the agenda as it was brought up in the meeting. I will tell you that I think this is unprecedented, especially considering the amount of people in this room. And those of you that served with me, I don't think we ever had a room this full. So I'm here to say, I think you're making a mistake. The state flag right behind you. Our liberties we prize and our rights we will maintain. It's part of this job. You know, I signed up for it. I got kicked off and the governor changed the law. That's my comment. Very disappointed.
Yep. Hi there. Patrick Anderson, 2410 State Avenue, Ames. I'm just going to kind of cut to the chase here because as I've read the fringe plan, the question that I would ask each one of you.
I've got a topic here that is on the agenda. Okay. And I know it's a difficult situation.
Yes. Aside from the fact that the process has been pretty haphazard as far as notification.
They did get your letter. This is for comments not on the agenda.
Yeah. I didn't send a letter to this group.
They still got it.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. The process sucks.
But
secondly,
if you want to talk about the process, that would be okay. But
yeah.
Please avoid the topic that is already on the agenda.
So are we going to actually discuss that topic and have public comment to it, or are we just going to be talked to? So we're going to be talked to about a very important topic.
You're going to listen to her.
Correct. Okay. Well, I'll accept that for now.
I would just like to say that I haven't had Brad Perkins, 5500 240th Street, Ames, Iowa. And in the memo that you're going to be discussing, my business is listed specifically. And this is the first time I have seen, so I have not had an opportunity to do a public comment on it. I would like to specifically address that tonight, but apparently I won't be able to be heard on that. Is that correct?
Correct.
You will still have an opportunity at the future as this progresses. Depending on how this meeting ends up and what we recommend, then it might move on to a place.
Okay. And specifically, this board does not want to hear from me since we are mentioned in this memo. You're saying that specifically, right?
I am taking the input from that tonight that summarized.
The comments you received.
Yes. Yes. Say your name and your address.
Alex Christensen at 2984 South Dakota. I just had a question because I was came to my attention your own procedural rules, and in there it has a section.
It's for cases. I'm familiar.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. So then, aside from that, what?
What was your question?
question? Oh, well, it has, when you talk about new business in here, it has a spot that talks about public comments.
Oh, yeah, there's a procedure for how we hear cases, development requests, under new business. Like conditional use permit.
Yeah.
We have a separate procedure. This is work.
What I will do for folks on Zoom is if you all ask a question, it seems like folks can hear me okay, but not you. So I will restate the question.
All right. Moving on to new business, 6.1, discussion and consideration of public comments on the draft Ames Urban Fringe Plan and changes to consider in the final draft. Next.
Okay. Just to refresh, I don't hear myself. So Iowa Code grants cities review authority over the area.
So if we shut it off when we're not talking?
Maybe. Did you change it? Seems to be okay now. Yeah. testing. It's a little better. I'll go for it. Okay, so Iowa Code grants cities the review authority over subdivisions and other land divisions within 2 miles of their boundaries. In this case, for the fringe plan, that's the image you see here. So I'm showing 2 miles around Ames, 2 miles around Gilbert. In this area, cities can require conformance with their subdivision regulations. So in the instance of Ames, full hookups to city infrastructure for any division in that 2 mile area, unless we have a plan and agree on areas where they will apply those standards and areas where they will not, and the county has review authority. So that's part of the reason why we're here. You know, we recently had an instance where a city denied a subdivision plat within 2 miles of their boundary, and the resident came to the county and said that you allow this under your code. Well, there's no overrule that the county has. You know, we both have to either agree to approve a subdivision or one of us can deny it. That's how it works in state code if we don't have a fringe plan. Next slide. So again, the fringe plan is a cooperative agreement that establishes shared land use policies for divisions and other future land uses. This plan touches on annexations, again, because one of the standards for divisions may be connecting to city infrastructure. And to do that, you need to annex into a city. We also outline types of land uses that may be appropriate in different areas to provide more guidance. So it's not just you can divide a property once into two. It's also we touch on for residential purposes or commercial purposes. And this is done through a 28E agreement, which is allowed under state code to cooperatively share and manage, you know, different aspects of the authorities counties or cities have. Okay. So again, beyond the clear review process for divisions, and I'll touch on that some more, why is Story County participating? There are legally binding policies about where and when annexation can occur through a fringe plan. We do not have that otherwise. I will talk more about what annexation means on future slides, but no, the county's comments on an annexation do not impact its viability unless we have a legally binding agreement like a fringe plan. So this is an important tool for the county to have a voice in how cities grow. Again, it provides a clear review process for divisions within 2 miles of cities. Without a plan, landowners and even the county might not know if the city would allow a division or not. You know, if somebody called and we didn't have a fringe plan, I'd say, reach out to Ames. Here's my standards, but you have to reach out to them too. And so there's no clear guidance. There's no clear plan that we all share and can look at. The city would likely follow policies in its comprehensive plan as it reviewed annexations, as it reviewed annexations and subdivisions. So for instance, let's say there's a division request and we don't have a fringe plan, but Ames has a comprehensive plan that shows this same urban reserve designation. Their policy for the urban reserve and their comprehensive plan is to allow residential uses on large lots, which is 35 acres or greater. So without a plan that we cooperatively work together to make more flexible policies in that designation, I don't know if a division would be allowed. So again, it's important we work together and we put our goals out there and put the city's goals out there and come to some mutual agreement so we can create more flexible policies that work for everybody. Again, Story County is not just the unincorporated area. This is also about caring about how cities grow efficiently and orderly. We want to promote orderly growth for our communities. So that's why we're doing this. The fringe plan is not county zoning authority. This does not rezone anyone's property. We've gotten a lot of comments that this is a rezoning. It is not. It does not change anyone from an agricultural zoning district to a residential zoning district. It does not force annexation if annexation is not proposed by a landowner. It is not permanent. It is proposed to be for the next 10 years, potentially with a 5-year renewal. Land use plans do change. I mean, we've seen that with the current fringe plan. There are areas in the current fringe plan shown as urban growth areas that are no longer shown that way. So while we attempt to take on, you know, long range planning, at the end of that period, plans do change. So it's not permanent. We're doing our best to think about the future, but I don't want anyone to think that this is the next, this is going to be the policy for the next 100 years. Okay. We do have a current fringe plan. It has been in place since 2006. It was based on Ames's 1997 land use policy plan and Ames, Storey County and Gilbert's priorities as well. Since then, Ames has a new comprehensive 2040 plan. The county now has a comprehensive plan too. Gilbert also has a brand new comprehensive plan, and the county has done a housing study. So it's time to update the plan to show our current priorities. The plan also was set to expire. It has been renewed several times at this point. We did all the cooperatives take action to renew it until November so that we can wrap up this current planning process. Okay, so again, the draft plan that you see before you, the maps that have been put out there for public outreach, those are mainly based on Ames's and Gilbert's comprehensive plans showing their growth areas, as well as Storey County took the lead and came up with priorities that you all saw, the Board of Supervisors saw, and integrated those as well. We did get direction to complete public outreach. We had three public meetings. One was more of a formal presentation, a kickoff meeting. On the agenda, you've got the audio from that meeting and a written transcript of all the comments. There were also open house meetings where individuals could talk more one-on-one with staff and ask, you know, more specific questions. There was a 30-day comment period where you could visit Storey County's website, view the plan, view an interactive map, leave comments on that map, leave comments in a form. We did receive a lot of participation. You know, we had over 100 participants in the first meeting, which is a pretty good percentage of the entire planning area. All comments, again, are available for review on the county's website for your review. So with the commission's feedback this evening on these comments and how to move forward, we've got a couple options. So I've prepared themes, comment themes. While we received a lot of comments, many were very similar in themes, so it's kind of easy to group these. I'm going to go through those themes. I'm going to say what staff would recommend doing. We can have some discussion. We can then either take action this evening, or I can bring back a more formal letter that you'd like to write your recommendations to Board Supervisors on that they could then pass on to the other cooperators, and you could take action on August 3rd if you'd like some more time to consider the comments in the letter, and so staff would prepare a letter for your review outlining our discussion and the direction we received tonight. So that should keep us on track for November, end of the year.
And I'm going to bring it up into those sections so that we have some discussion with each area instead of holding the discussion. So I usually say just that clarifying question, but with this tonight, we'll have discussion with each section.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more discussion as well as that.
Okay. So these are the main comment themes. Comments related to annexation, urban reserve overlay, and then there are other comments related to conditional uses, our rural residential expansion area, and then just some more miscellaneous ones. That's more that staff identified as issue areas that we need to address too. So let's talk about annexation. I think I want to just go over broadly what an annexation even is. So property owners' request to be annexed is voluntary. Just because we're showing these areas that could be annexed on a map doesn't mean that you're going to be involuntarily taken into a city, right? There is a process in state code that allows that. I don't think Ames has ever done that or Gilbert. I'm not familiar with it ever happening in Story County. It is not common. And that's not what we're talking about tonight. There's no involuntary annexation plan. So this is voluntary. So if you're mapped in an area that allows annexation, you can request to be annexed to the city. Why would you do this? Maybe you're interested in developing your property or selling your property to somebody who is. Again, the adoption of the fringe plan does not automatically annex anyone. You have to fill out a petition and submit it to a city. There is, under state code, an allowance. If an area is proposed to be annexed voluntarily, they go to the city, they petition to be annexed, to create more uniform city boundaries, a city may also include 20% of a adjacent land area that's non-consenting. So if 80% of the land area has petitioned to come into the city could include, you know, 20% of that, of property owners who are non-voluntarily coming, don't want to come into the city, but they could be included.
20% of
the land area.
The whole land area.
Yep. So that's called an 80-20 annexation, but still it would take a property owner to be interested in annexing in the first place. I think that because of the land area size involved in an 80-20 annexation, voluntary 80-20 annexations have a presumption of validity under state law. What that means is if they're not violating state law, they get approved. So while the county's notified and can provide comments, if the process has been followed correctly for an annexation, if they're not leaving an island of unincorporated land or creating some other issue that's in violation of state law, they're approved without a fringe plan. So with a fringe plan, the county will be notified. You know, part of the agreement is we review all the annexations. Part of the agreement is the city cannot annex in certain areas. And part of the agreement might be policies that say, okay, if you're going to annex in these areas, here's when we think it's appropriate and we've all agreed. So that gives us more of a voice. So I think the main takeaway from this slide is that annexation initiates because a property owner is interested. No one's getting automatically annexed with the adoption of this plan. And this plan gives the county an actual review role and a legally binding agreement for when annexation is okay. Question?
Could I ask the underlying part? If it's available within 200 feet and a septic system fails, I wonder what constitutes a septic system failing.
Ooh, I think environmental health has to do an inspection of that system
and
determine.
You know, for my own rural living, that there are a lot of septic system issues.
Yeah. I think generally when there is a transfer of property, there's an inspection done. And then it's determined if the septic is functioning. That point is that when properties are annexed that have an existing dwelling or an existing development is annexed, they're not required to hook up to city water. They don't have to upgrade their roads. The only requirement, and this is a state law requirement, is that if your septic system fails and sewer is available within 200 feet of the building, with that the septic system is serving, you have to connect. So it's not even within the property, 200 feet of the property.
So once again, as we so often see it, when a problem arises, that it gets enforced.
Yep. I have also seen it enforced when a new dwelling is being constructed and there's existing sewer on one side of the road, like across from a dwelling. We had one at Huxley like that. And the house was proposed to be, you know, within 200 feet, and it was a new house that was going in. And that wasn't even in the city. So, again, this doesn't apply. This rule would still apply if you were outside of the city, but the sewer was on the other side of the road. But I think it's worth bringing up because folks, there's a lot of concern about cost.
In all fairness, the water and the sewage put together on a building in Ames, some of the other cities, some people don't have water.
Okay. Can you clarify the county's role in annexation?
Without a fringe fund. We are notified, and we can provide comments on if it conforms with our comprehensive plan.
The fringe plan.
Then we have a review role where we can say annexation is allowed in this area. Following these policies, we think the policies are met. It's okay. If we don't think the policies are met and the annexation goes through, we've got a legally binding agreement. Any cooperative violates any policy in the fringe plan, they could sue the other cooperators. Or be sued.
The county
mm-hmm.
pursue action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's true, too. If the county violates a rural subdivision policy, the city could pursue action against the county.
So is there any authority that the county is moving through the
over annexations? No.
The mechanism of review for the county is the Board of Supervisors? Or is
it's the Board of Supervisors.
Multi-annexation settlement?
No. We follow state law process for annexations, and they don't. The state law does not say we bring annexations to planning and zoning commission. If that's something you'd be interested in, we could amend the code to introduce our own process that would add you all in as a review role on those. I'll write that down.
You think from the concern again with the comments that although annexation is not happening with the fringe plan, it effectively is because you're only allowing the city to develop within that 2 mile radius.
Can you restate that?
The annexation is the fringe plan does not speak for anything with annexation. It's not really annexation that is voluntary. Right?
Yeah.
But I think the comment that I'm understanding is that I feel that effectively they're not allowed to do anything with their property unless it gets
in some areas, yeah.
In the high mm-hmm. growth areas.
Yeah, in the urban growth areas, there's policies limiting divisions unless you're annexed first. And that's a current policy, too.
Going back to the relationship between if there is a fringe plan agreed upon, that would effectively, whatever the city wanted to do would
be the same. Right, because let's say somebody's proposing to do a subdivision and it's in an urban growth area that Ames is identified in their comprehensive plan, they have review authority over that, even a boundary line adjustment. Just changing property lines, they have review authority over that. So without a fringe plan, they could still require annexation. Other questions before we kind of delve into the comments?
I just a little procedural thing. I understand the no public comment structure here. So this whole topic really did not have any input or
we requested that we have set up times for the public to get input, and then we're going through it tonight. And the agenda item is the presentation of staff, the public comment that has been gathered, and in the interest of not saying this where we're getting a repeat of everything. And there are opportunities in the future for public input.
With this report?
Yeah, we'll have public hearings. Yes, we'll have public hearings. These are just recommendations. So staff has to put together a final draft, and then we'll have outreach and hearings on that draft.
This is a draft. This is a draft, and in order to come up with a draft, we've got to work.
Yeah, I think the nuanced conversation, right? There has been input, which hasn't been direct to us, gone through staff, mainly into other forums that I've not participated in all of them. So in order for staff, in order for us to effectively vote on what public input is, I don't, it certainly won't have to be that are circular and no new information, but allow for clarifying based on a summary of information seems simple. It's probably
It's up to the chair. If the chair would like input or a vote from the commission, that's up.
I mean,
it's up to the chair.
Procedurally,
how we've done it. If the chair would like input from the other commissioners or a vote, we've had that done before too, but some chair mock.
My input is, there's people here, there's people who want to be, I think, the big point of frustration is the ability to be effective in this year. We've looked at initially for 2 minutes, and it's hard to want to take too much more time, but it's very important to plan that really what our hope for our next step is that there's a justice plan that we can vote on and approve in 1 week. But to not get public input, and wait until what should be the final plan is, and we get new information. It's a first case. You're having to say me 8 more times.
How about as chair that I call the chair of, and my suggestion is that we listen to this because it selected people who were here, and there's been 150 people that have contributed, and I don't want to be off balance with taking in all the commentary. That is my reason, pretty much, you know, like, and you know, 150 people, if we've got 20 here now. However, I will open up to the commission for a vote on whether and I will limit the time if so on them to come out. So I would ask for a vote, John, who is in favor of just giving me input. All those in favor of my summarizing the staff input.
Can I have a question? Mm-hmm. I would like to make comment of what was commented at those different meetings, because I have questions of people to make comments.
You mean after the public?
Well, you know, we have all this on the agenda, and I went through it, and I'd like to ask just clarifying questions
of the staff. Mm-hmm. And that part will be in there. That's why it's divided into the different sections. And instead of discussing at the end, the VIP section, and we'll hold to that.
Okay, that's fine. As long as
I would say, I think the first thing to decide is, since I've opened it up to about all those in favor, I guess.
allowing limited public comment.
Allow, okay, how about we'll do it this way. All those in favor of allowing public comment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
If we're going to allow public comment, are we going to stop now or are we going to wait?
I think we should wait until the end.
Point of order, you have no motion to take the vote.
Okay. So we, okay. Can you restate your question, Dalton? Nope. Could you restate your question, Dalton?
I'm just asking if we're going to open it up to public input. Are we going to stop a million now or are we going to wait?
I think there's five sections.
Yes.
I would prefer to do it at the end. Otherwise, you know, one issue will be given. We all get tired after a couple hours, and one, the earlier ones would get done.
So are you proposing that we will go through each section, and then at the very end, the public will have, but not after each section?
I'd recommend a time limit of 2 minutes.
I don't think my
okay.
Two people in favor. Given the
let's just do it again.
Given the confusion about this, I'm going to say that we have input at the end for the public and limited to 3 minutes. And that will be firm. And I would suggest if you have more to say than 3 minutes that you plan ahead and pass it off to the next person. Because we won't make a session.
Can I clarify if that's comments just on the recommendations or comments on the plan?
On recommendations.
Okay. Okay. So the main comments received regarding annexation, number one was what happens and concerns about annexing existing rural residential developments, mainly Meadow Glen. You can see on this map, it is just east of State Avenue, south of the existing city limits. I would call it kind of a peninsula of county land into the city. The gray area on the map is city. And so blue is urban growth and showing Meadow Glen, which is a rural subdivision in the county. I think that this is the only rural subdivision that I'm aware of that's mapped this way in an urban growth area. So that's why we've got most of the comments on this one, and I'm going to focus my discussions on it. Meadow Glen is not shown as an urban growth area because the city wants to redevelop it or annex it for some other reason. Because of how the city has grown around Meadow Glen and created this peninsula shape, if growth to the west were to occur, it would become an island. City growth to the west were to occur, it would become an island. It'd be effectively disconnected from the county, but remain in the county. And that is not allowed under state law for annexations. So if the property to the west, the Champlin Farms property, which is the only property in the southwest area of Ames that's shown as urban growth, were proposed to be annexed, Meadow Glen would need to be annexed too to meet state law. Okay, so some concerns we've heard about what would happen with Meadow Glen, we've already discussed water and sewer and roads. But other concerns have to do with, you know, the county sheriff serves the area now. Who would serve in the event of annexation? And Ames Police would. Ames Fire would serve the area if annexed instead of West Story Fire, which is a rural fire district. You know, I think one of the concerns is that rural fire districts are equipped differently. They have pumper trucks because rural areas do not have hydrants, and city fire departments have trucks that connect to hydrants. And so in the event of a large fire that required more water, we would need to call West Story to provide mutual aid. And there is an existing mutual aid agreement. Ames Fire would provide, they'd respond, right, and provide, you know, immediate life-saving services. They do have some limited water on a truck. And they'd also respond to medical calls. Right now, Mary Greeley responds to medical calls in portions of the unincorporated area. And so that's, you know, pretty limited because they only have a certain amount of ambulances. So oftentimes fire response is just is a faster response for medical calls. Concerns were also raised by residents of Meadow Glen that if it were annexed, the tax revenues that go to the West Story Fire Department, the amount of revenues lost would cause the fire department to have to shut down. I at the public meetings kept hearing figures around $30,000 in lost revenue, and so staff decided to do the math. So we got the levy rate, which is about 60 cents for $1,000 valuation. We took the taxable valuation of all properties shown in the urban growth area. So that includes the Champlin Farms property and the Meadow Glen properties, and determined it would be about $12,000 in lost revenues. And we did provide this information to West Story. We met with them. I think West Story in the budget I saw, which was I think fiscal year 20, received revenues around $99,000 from, you know, Washington Township, Meadow Glen, but also a township in Boone County and the city of Kelly. And they have not provided any formal comments. And I, again, just wanted to show, this is the current Ames Urban Fringe Plan land use classes map. Dark brown in this map shows areas that are shown as annexation priorities, similar to the blue areas on the updated map. So Meadow Glen and a large portion of Southwest Ames are currently shown as urban service area or area that was intended to be annexed. So this isn't, you know, a change from the current plan. So staff does have some recommendations on this. We think if we could do a two-map system in the updated plan, like we have in the current plan. I really wanted to keep things simple in the current plan, so that's why I didn't do this in the draft. But we have a map of annexable lands, and then we have a map that's just about land use. And so Meadow Glen is an existing rural subdivision. We could show it that way. Policies allowing division of land in that area would apply. But you know, we can't be an impediment to state code, so it has to be shown as annexable on the annexable lands map, but it would allow some more flexibility if somebody wanted to, you know, divide a lot for another house in that area. So that's staff's recommendation. Questions?
There's a section on the division part. I'm trying to traveling
around the subdivision, and it's like they expand, like subdivide, and then the next person can subdivide. So, with existing rural residential this designation, I don't have that concern as much as I do with properties that are in Ag Farm Service or Urban Reserve, because these are properties that are existing in an existing developed subdivision. I don't think we'll have as much demand. The zoning district is much different. and the subdivision design guidelines will apply to. So it won't be so much expansion and platting of other parcels. It'll really just be division of one parcel into two. And we did introduce a policy to allow adjustments of boundary lines without requiring annexation first, too. So that's a new thing in this plan. Questions on that recommendation? It's tough because if the land to the west is to be annexed and developed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he said, I don't see that the remaining of rural residential district is major in this issue. Mm-hmm. So, that is recommending Meadowland rural residential district. My question is, would it be as a major? I mean, it says rural residential existing, it does. He's saying that it doesn't really change the situation when they remain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he's saying is, can it just stay with it? He does not want to index, you know, men have no desire to create redevelopment in that area. Maybe the map is not a real change.
Yeah.
That is my question.
Mm-hmm. It's currently urban residential, so a very similar
urban
requires annexation.
Is there any advantage to Meadowland to be changed to rural residential?
It would allow divisions.
Allow divisions.
Of land.
So if somebody was living within Meadowland, 40 houses, they wanted to buy their property, going into existing would allow that property to
without first annexation.
And that would give them more freedom in their land.
Mm-hmm.
The individual.
Yep, and there would be, you know, we're going to talk about restrictions on conditional uses in urban growth areas that wouldn't apply. So it would provide them with more flexibility.
And is that kind of addressing what we've talked about before, that one for requesting a second dwelling?
Yeah.
And
yes. I do understand the email we got today. I know that this does not change or stop the annexation of Meadow Glen, but I am not sure that anything in the French plan could, because it is state law that requires it.
Say it is the final, it's not the final.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the next slide. Yeah. So the Champlin Farms is the property that's shown as an urban growth area adjacent to Meadow Glen.
We
can
have
Meadow
Glen. Yeah. So I did get in the car and I did go down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just pretty good. And I went into the world, the Campion Road, Timber's Line Road,
mm-hmm.
and Woodview. Those all have that feel of country and rural, but they are city.
Worley is not.
Rural is not. Okay. So if a business then area was rural, we have to be annexed.
Yes. Yes, that's included. Could you go back a slide? Right now they are required to. One more slide.
Perfect.
Yeah. One more. You see, okay, so you see Meadow Glen. And then there's Dartmoor east west, and there's that blue, and you can kind of see there's a railroad track that's gray. That's an island.
Right.
Those aren't allowed.
Right. So an island that the next one that points down and to that airport road and then state. And that brown line there, is that currently
Yep, that's in the city.
And farther down. So that's the little cap right there. Is that city?
Yeah.
And the brown on the east side, that's city as well. Right?
Yes, yes. And some of the blue on the east side has recently been annexed as well. So the seed grain research.
But so rural existing subdivisions existing, would give these property owners more flexibility than rent?
Yes.
It doesn't need annexation coming in.
Right.
So what does state law does know?
Right. So if there's a property owner to the west that proposes annexation, they would likely have to come in at that point.
Which would be?
Yes, which is why it's our next point. Yeah. Let's talk about Champlin. Okay. So I broadened the Champlin topic because I understand beyond the Meadow Glen concerns and how development of the southwest area of Ames requires Meadow Glen to be annexed. I think there's concerns about impacts of city development on environmentally sensitive areas. And all of the comments were really about impacts on Whirly Creek. But all of our urban growth areas contain environmentally sensitive areas. So if we're going to be looking at the policies for urban growth areas and having environmentally sensitive areas for Whirly Creek, it makes sense to broaden that out and relook at all the policies for all the areas, right? For instance, there's a large amount of, the floodplain related to the Skunk River that's shown as urban reserve. So maybe we need to, staff recommendation, I'm getting ahead of myself here, is yes, we understand there are concerns. I'm going to talk about those concerns a little bit more. But let's take a look as cooperators about the policies for protection of environmentally sensitive areas once they're annexed. So Champlin Farms is that 137-acre property just to the west of Meadow Glen. Whirly Creek does run through a small section of the northern portion of the property. There's a treed area around Whirly Creek. The south contains a tributary to Whirly Creek as well. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the way the environmentally sensitive policies work currently, they don't apply once a property is annexed. Ames' city ordinances apply at that point. So some of those ordinances include stormwater management, so requiring that runoff from a new development is treated on site and released slowly at a rate not to exceed pre-development levels. So we're not, causing an increase of runoff into the creek, for instance. Other policies include identifying and delineating natural areas so they can be preserved. And so these are pretty similar to the county's policies as well. So Ames does have those ordinances in place. I've heard some concerns about, and you got a letter today about, needing to straighten Whirly Creek for stormwater management. I think that if there's existing erosion issues in a creek and it's a really windy creek, there can be some benefits to broadening the curves if more development is coming in for water quality purposes. That would be an overall net uplift and benefit. I haven't heard that proposed. I'm just saying that's what I've seen professionally for stormwater management. It's not the channelization of rivers that we saw in the 1960s, right? And I'm not saying this is happening, right? I'm just trying to give an example of. When a river has a lot of curves, it can cause undercutting because you're going outside of the banks, right? So if there's an increase in runoff into an area, you might, instead of just piling a bunch of riprap on a bank to stabilize it, it can be beneficial, for water quality in the stream to kind of broaden a curve, but that's not straightening a stream and paving a stream. That's not
what's proposed.
No. And the other difference is there was a 2005 study of extending sewer to the southwest area of Ames. That's not storm sewer. That's not storm water. That's the wastewater sewer. So there's a difference there. And that study, you know, had initially looked at using Worley Creek to extend sewer along, but did end up, due to environmental and archaeological concerns, coming up with other options as well. Yeah, there's other alternatives explored. Yeah. It hasn't been installed. No. I'm just saying, I think there was concern about, you know, sewer and conflating that with storm sewer and how it would go through the creek. I'm just trying to clarify. So there was a sewer study done if they were to serve the southwest growth area all the way to County Line Road, not just the Chamblett Farms property.
You have studied this and studied this. You've studied wastewater. You have studied sewer water. The city of Ames has studied this. I've gone to some of them, and they are highly impressed with how concerned they are for environment. So some in here would disagree with that. But what I have seen, what you personally have seen, there's people in the community that are extremely concerned about conservation. And there's something that's hard to deal with. On this meeting, they're going to be up in arms. They're going to take the decision, and the city will. The Planning and Zoning Commission will deal with it. So if I was the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, they were very much. So I have faith in them. Will not agree. I have faith, and you are having a master's in it. And I've read the material, and all the Audubon Society, they're concerned about this wastewater, sewer water, extending them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just put that neighborhood.
Yeah. I think the other piece of that is, you know, that was a broader study of serving this entire southwest area to County Line Road. And we're talking now about, you know, that area's urban reserve, not urban growth, in the proposed plan. And the Champlin Farms property is now the only piece of that southwest area shown as urban growth area. And that's because it's because water and sewer are subbed to that site already.
No.
You know, we are going to talk about the urban reserve annexation policies here soon, but one of the policies includes you have to be within a half mile of existing infrastructure.
But wastewater, sewage, and major issues. Much control would we retain?
I think without a fringe plan, there's still the comprehensive plan that Ames has that shows growth in this area. And so, so we wouldn't have a review over annexation of any of the urban reserve area that we're currently proposing in the proposed fringe plan.
The Champlin Farm, is it one family that owns
it? It recently sold to, this is a good question, thanks. It recently sold to the Flummerfelts. One of the comments received was that this was going to be a manufactured housing development. We reached out to them last week. They built one house on one of the parcels and intend to build two more single family dwellings on the other two parcels and don't have plans at this point for development. And again, they'd have to propose to be annexed to start that process.
Okay.
So again, Champlin Farms is shown as an urban growth area because there's infrastructure stuff to the site that could serve it. So again, it's shown that way in AIMS's comprehensive plan, and we took that into the fringe plan because of that infrastructure availability. But again, I do understand the concerns for the, you know, environmentally sensitive area in this and other urban growth areas, and would just recommend we take another look at those, at how those policies apply to areas that are going to be annexed if they're going to develop.
Why take another look? Approach
Ames and Gilbert, the other cooperators.
Bring other areas where you can, because you're saying that'll send go back to residential.
Existing.
The urban growth, we can pass that.
Yeah, we'd probably still map Champlain Farms with urban growth.
Is there any other areas of the map where we have urban growth outside of the rural residential?
No. But we would review just to make sure there's no other existing rural subdivisions in this situation that I'm somehow missing. That'd be part of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. We want to apply the policies, you know, across the board. Questions on Champlain Farms? The alternative, it's not really not mapping it as urban growth, just given the infrastructure and the appropriateness if this site were developed further to bring it into the city, given the infrastructure availability. Not allowing rural residential development there. In the Champlain Farms property, this is an interesting comment because that was proposed in 1985 and it was rezoned, but the subdivision was never proposed. And, you know, I looked back at staff notes then and they said, you know, given the availability and proximity to the city, we're also unsure if rural growth is appropriate in this area. But it never came to a staff recommendation because after the rezoning, the subdivision was not taken forward.
So going from rural growth, that's kind of the...
We'd call it rural residential expansion. Those were the comments on, you know, if Champlain isn't designated as urban growth, what would it be designated? But the other comments were, you know, don't designate this for city growth without saying what it should be instead. Does that make sense? Ben's shaking his head. That makes me feel better.
One more time.
Yeah.
What is it now? What is
it? It's urban service area now.
Okay. And it's, the comments have suggested that it becomes
not an area that AIMS annexes. Rural residential, if they specified what it should become.
And if we're given that designation, then it would allow for subdivision.
Yes.
So not typical rural
life. Yeah, and I guess the other option would be we could designate it ag farm service, but then it's in the middle of this urban reserve area. Does that make sense from a land use perspective either? Most of it is. And designating it as urban reserve, you know, would still allow annexation because infrastructure is available.
So the comments are in bulk of this particular part of it is to change the current?
Not to map it as anything the city could annex. That's the bulk comment. They're close to an existing residential development inside the city.
Yeah, it would be in a chip of the ones to develop the shack to be in a
store. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's an existing rural residential development, and my understanding is, you know, the end of the cul-de-sac or somewhere in that area is adjacent to Champlin, and they are served with city water and sewers, so it's in very close proximity. Yeah.
Given that, would it, if it were done what the commentary has, it would still be under the state rules of if it's so many feet from...
I don't know. It depends where somebody built their house on those 137 acres. Yeah. And again, I don't know what we would designate it as. We could designate it as ag farm service, but then we'd probably be looking at requesting to redesignate that entire southwest area as ag farm service, and I don't know how feasible that is. Other questions?
If we did that, belabor this as long as I possibly can.
We have to negotiate with the other cooperators to do that somehow.
And so it would become ag business area.
Ag farm service. No, it just allow, you know, 35-acre lot sizes. It wouldn't allow, you know, further divisions for residential development. But I think given the interest in the area with the infrastructure, I don't know if that's something Ames would be interested in giving up. We could ask, but I doubt it would be. Yeah.
Do you mean the planning and zoning?
I mean, yeah, I think ultimately City Council makes the decision. I think this is a helpful map for us to look at. So again, Champlin's in blue, it's kind of that square area. And then the other blue hatched area is urban reserve, which would still allow annexation if infrastructure is available.
And then blue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that. Yep, we're going to talk about that. So again, I don't know if it makes sense to have an island of ag farm service designated as urban reserve, doesn't address the actual issue because it'd probably still be annexable.
And the dirt, the brown, the sandy brown color, that is rural, that's A1.
That's just aerial image. That's just farm field, picture of farm field, like a, yeah.
The green is just green, though. Green is like
the environmentally sensitive. Yeah. So it probably, you know, it doesn't make sense just to redesignate the Champlin Farms property. We'd probably be looking at thinking about that whole area as a county line that's shown under blue hatched.
Nice picture of the
pavement, You've all got a map that shows it in lavender. I don't know why I picked that color. And we'll get to that on the next slide, too. Okay, let's just broadly talk about the annexation policies in the urban reserve overlay. So the map that's more zoomed out that you have in front of you, the blue hatched area is considered urban reserve overlay. The main comments we got is, gosh, that's a large area. And it is. This is an area where long-term annexation could occur, or potentially in the shorter term if infrastructure becomes available. And so we've written policies to that effect that wouldn't allow annexation of the whole urban reserve, but would effectively reserve that should city growth occur in the long term, so that we're not running into obstacles with rural residential growth. Where there's, you know, the city wants to grow in a certain area, but the county's approved a wind farm there, for instance. So the specific policies for when annexation is permitted in this urban reserve area in the draft plan are, again, infrastructure shall be available or available with extensions within under a half mile. They should be logical and beneficial, not just for the property, but the overall growth of the area. Go to the next slide, please, Andrea. Could you keep it down a little bit? Thanks.
You have to do it very deep because it's distracting. We're concentrating very hard here.
So again, most comments were that this is a very large area. We did also receive comments, I know we've talked about how annexation works now, but I think there were concerns that this entire urban reserve would be annexed in the next 10 years and the impact that would have on rural fire districts and their budgets. I did also meet with Grant Township and Milford Township and the Nevada Fire District to talk about what the impact would be if urban reserve were annexed, all of it, in fact, were annexed. And we determined that it would amount to about $12,000 in revenue loss to Nevada Fire, so they didn't have any concerns, and they understood that growth occurs incrementally and that this is a long-term plan. However, staff still recognizes the concern about the amount of the urban reserve overlay. We want to provide, you know, flexibility to cities in how they grow, make sure it's still orderly, but also be responsive to public comments. Next slide. So we're recommending further working with other cooperators, Ames and Gilbert, to reduce the amount of area that can be annexed. So again, if we're talking about having two separate maps, one could show that this is urban reserve, so policies from a land use perspective limiting incompatible developments would still apply, whether that's, you know, conditional uses like wind farms or rural residential subdivisions. But then we would have a separate annexable map where only certain portions of the urban reserve that are truly needed should, you know, growth take a different direction away from urban growth areas in the next 10 or 15 years. Are annexable. And then we need to do an amendment to the plan if anything outside of those areas in the urban reserve were proposed to be annexed. I've got specific recommendations for two of those urban reserve areas that I wasn't going to go into now. But otherwise, my recommendation is just leaving it up to staff to kind of work through with the other cooperators what their immediate annexation needs could be. If you wanted to get more specific, we could talk about that too.
This is just me talking. Personally, I don't see the benefits of the city's growth. It seems like a lot of the growth needs to be
were as close to I-35. And around Highway 30, but this is getting closer to the long term. I really don't see what the advantage for Ames to grow this way would be. It is very rural still. It is a lot of ISU research farms. I don't see the advantage of developers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this overlay protects was there, then I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the
talking about this quadrant down here? Everything south of Highway 30, pretty much from State Avenue to the west. That's about 1-2 miles from Boone County. And it is far enough from me, but better than if you think of the post office and go down there, it's far enough. And it's south. Roads make decisions. This is Highway 30 makes the division. Railroad tracks make the division between north and south. So the Highway 30 is making a division. And so, and the state, South Dakota Avenue, R38, that's a division. So that quadrant right there, I think you even want to consider that.
Yeah. It's this section. So this is the maybe proximity of
IRC. Yeah, and so I think this is one of the areas where we could look at applying the urban reserve, but not
to protect it,
but not allowing annexation. I specifically recommend later on, if we're going to do an annexable lands map, we can map the Iowa State properties in this area as urban reserve, but not map them as annexable. So we can let's look at this map then. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but we'll do an exercise. So the lavender on the map is Iowa State government owned land. You can see that mainly south of the Champlin Farms property is and north of that is where you've got Iowa State land that's also urban reserve. So the staff recommendation was to keep that as urban reserve, but not allow annexation within the time frame of this plan. So it kind of shows a long-term intent or, Iowa State for some reason sold land. That would be something, I'd be interested in city growth happening there, but not, in the short term, we all understand that they're not looking to sell.
This was supposed to have another map that would say that you're not recommended for annexation.
Right. Correct. Right. And so then what would be left that's not Iowa State land but is urban reserve in the southwest is south of Highway 30 and west of South Dakota down to Zumwalt Station over about half a mile up north and then back to the county line. Do you see that area that's just green but has urban reserve over it? Yes. And so then the question would be, is that area an urban reserve that you see as annexable urban reserve or just an urban reserve where we're not allowing annexation? Do we even want to get that specific with this discussion tonight, or would you just like staff to broach that subject with the other cooperators?
So if this is not annexable, then that would mean that this part would not be an island.
No, if Champlin was annexed, it'd still be an island. Right.
From the 4.4 percent annexation by the city is permitted when infrastructure is available.
Mm-hmm.
Bass Incentives Reserve, but then another benefit system.
We take the annexation policies and apply them under a different section. So the urban, so we
it's only saying that.
Yeah, we'd take that out of the overlay and have a separate annexation policy section. So the overlays wouldn't, and the designations wouldn't discuss annexation potential. Yeah. And so then we'd have a different section of annexation and a different map that said in these areas it's allowed, in these areas infrastructures are required, in these areas it's not allowed. It'd be separate designation. Does that make sense? It's a little more, yeah, it's what I wanted to avoid, but I think it addresses some concerns. I know, I said to my planner, I said, are you guys good with formats? Yeah. So again, if we're going to state that in the urban reserve, the Iowa state land, southwest of the town isn't annexable, and that's a request from the county to the other cooperators. Would you want to include the rest of the urban reserve in southwest? Yeah. In short term, we all understand they're not interested in selling, but there is interest in.
But the only, I mean, the only way we're just annexing, so is if they sold it, and then it would be trying to amend to get it into a different. So it's really not accomplishing anything. That's the take on it.
Yeah, but we've gotten a lot of comments about why is this mapped as Iowa state land, and, you know, quite honestly, it doesn't have any impact on Iowa state land being mapped that way either. So I don't really know what the point of those comments were.
So,
because, you know,
doing a,
having
a separate map in order to.
That would affect Meadow Glen, too. Right. So it would allow them to be rural residential existing, but still annexable.
Which, in reality, the thing that that would accomplish would be
more flexibility for Meadow Glen. And then in this case, acknowledging that we understand short term Iowa State has research firms there and isn't interested in selling.
About 6 years.
In the planning horizon.
I think we have not heard any objections.
They've not commented.
Mm-hmm. They commented on that to not sale.
Ames reached out to them when they were working on the 2040 comprehensive plan and mapping this as urban reserve in that plan.
One of the emails we received said that Iowa State has since acquired three more parks.
Yes, and that's not in the urban reserve. That's in Ag Farm Service farther south.
Is it?
Unless we're talking about the acquisition in 2019 that's reflected on this map.
Essentially, the commentary is about acquisition and it's using this as a way to.
I think the commentary.
The Iowa State part of it as a reason to.
I think the commentary was why is this mapped as urban reserve when it's Iowa State lands and we all know it's not going to be city anytime soon. But again, land use plans show a city or county's long-term intent. They might not come true. I mean, we've had this area mapped as urban growth since 1997. It's never happened.
It brings to mind some of the commentary about, you know, passing on the land through the generations. Mm-hmm. And how much people want to do that, and how much that is isn't happening. You know, that the best we act for the future, not just for the parties involved right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the land and the planning and zoning commission. So we can't get promises from people, even I would say.
Yeah, I think that's true.
They are the decision.
I believe that, you know, I understand Iowa State's interest in acquiring land down there. I also understand the city's interest in growing down there. Should Iowa State not be acquiring land down there? How do we balance those interests? It's hard.
Received numerous requests for development in the area until the urban reserve overlay helps preserve the farmland in the area as it restricts rural development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what does this pertain to commercial real estate, particularly? Is this an appropriate one to talk about this or not?
Let's wait till the conditional use permit section, because that section of the memo was on the area between 190th and 180th, and then we're getting into conditional use permits too. I hope that'll make sense later on. Yeah. So again, staff's recommendation on the urban reserve overall is just to have us work with the cooperators to work to limit what portions can be annexed. If you would like to get more specific, we can.
I'll
state that I did recommend we take the Iowa State land out as annexable, but that's something you all could consider, too. And maybe, you know, like with the seed research, maybe with this.
Because it's not going to be annexed until they want to sell it.
Yeah. So, no, it's just showing that we understand their intent. And if they want it to annex, then they'd need to go through an amendment process. Like with the feed mill, or the research, the grain mill research farm, that was already designated as something that could be annexed, so they didn't need to go through an amendment to annex that. But they ended up wanting to annex to get city sewer, the property. Okay. We can talk about divisions now, unless you guys need a break. Okay. So in the current fringe plan, who can divide property is extremely limited. Essentially, in the ag farm service area, which is most of the area that's currently ag farm service in the draft plan and urban reserve, we don't allow divisions for new lots. We don't even allow reductions in existing 35-acre pieces, except in the case that there's a farmstead that was built there pre-1977. So it's pretty restrictive. Basically, people have to build on 35 acres, even if they meet an exception to that under county zoning. Can you go to the next slide? We wrote a policy to provide more flexibility in the ag farm service area. Staff's recommending also applying that policy in the urban reserve area to provide those folks with the same flexibility. And what that would do is if you meet an exception to the 35-acre lot size requirement, you can reduce your lot down to an acre. You can't create new buildable lots, but you can reduce the lot size. The remainder you could sell to a farmer. You could maintain in an outlot or in an easement, some sort of protected state. And this would be advantageous for mortgage purposes and reducing the cost of buying a lot to build on. Yep. Yep. the main comments we got on this is folks do want to create additional lots. I do understand that. There's a lot of information in your memo. I can go through it if you'd like. But we have so much demand in this fringe area for residential development. I am concerned about the amount of divisions and new lots we would get in if we allowed that, especially because these areas are zoned A1 agricultural. So once you do one division, if you're not done, you can do, you know, from one parcel, get up to three buildable lots out of that. And another recommendation would be adding a strategy to amend our code after the plan to allow accessory dwelling units. If we got a lot of comments about, I want a family member to live on my property, so that would be an option too. Instead of it, and that would address the creation of new lots for new development, and it would confine it to existing parcels. Questions or other recommendations on that? Yeah, and again, it's a current policy. We're just making more flexible. So no new lots, but you can reduce your lot size. And the draft plan doesn't allow that in the urban reserve, so we're recommending allow that in the urban reserve. Okay. The area between 180th and 190th, that's between Ames and Gilbert, it is currently mapped as urban reserve in the draft plan. It's mapped as urban reserve because there are portions that, you know, the cities may have the ability to serve with infrastructure. But long-term, there's other portions that if investments were made in pioneer infrastructure, it could be an area that supports city growth, too. So it's important to reserve it from rural growth in the interim. All public comments received were just to keep it as open space during the planning horizon, not to allow city growth there. We also received a letter from the City of Gilbert that was on the Agenda Center requesting to be the sole cooperator allowed to annex that area. The current urban reserve policy does not state which cooperator can annex there. It's not picking a cooperator, so it wasn't limiting whether Ames or Gilbert could annex in that area if infrastructure became available, but that was Gilbert's request. So staff's recommendation is to limit the area that's annexable in that area. And we've got a specific area shown in purple that annexation would be allowed in. That's our recommendation. It's between the railroad track on 190th and Highway 69. This is an area where Ames has more capacity for sewer. I think the capacity for sewer is pretty limited once you get north of the Gulf and Country Club and west of the Gulf and Country Club. So this is truly an area where city infrastructure might be available. That's why I'm getting so specific with this area. And this would effectively reduce the annexable area between 180th and 190th in half. Mm-hmm. So we're still keeping the reserve, but we're reducing the annexable reserve here. And we're not recommending changing the policy just to allow one cooperator to annex there.
So is this
Dan having another.
Yeah. Be on that second path. The other option, you know, the commission could make a recommendation that we don't allow any annexation in this area, just keep it as urban reserve. But again, we need to go to the other cooperators, and this is, you know, a plan we need to agree on at the end of the day. Comments or questions? Yeah. I get, we get a lot of requests for new rural subdivisions in this area. And the fringe plan currently designates it as the study area, which we were supposed to maintain. We were supposed to come up with a study that everybody agreed on what to do with this area, and it never happened.
And they have urban trails, which have how many units of housing? We're talking 300 or more.
Yeah.
So they really need to work in that 180 to 190. I appreciate that.
That would be the purpose of it, if I'm just wanting to keep rural land.
So one of them is about very much to keep rural.
Between
Gilbert and Engler, as the most effort. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the only buffer between the
first and the Alvin. There's a lot of land there that is admitted from the city. And so what Gilbert has requested is that portion would be just for Gilbert.
Yes.
So it would still join up the development, so it would be housing if they chose to annex.
And staff, you know, did think about an east-west buffer instead of a, you know, north-south buffers like we've shown here, but it's not really how sewer works. You know, it doesn't, what would a quarter mile buffer accomplish from 180th if the rest of it is going to be served with city? I think the other options, what you said, Debbie, is to recommend not showing it as annexable, but we, again, this is something we all have to agree on. And so I don't know how the council would feel about that. No annexation there.
How important is it to have Gilbert and Ames not have the same thing? Yeah. And I know, a lot of people that live there that thanks for, and I'm just being kind of the devil's advocate here now, because in some ways it's already changed. You know, the flavor of it. I'm a teacher at that school, and the FFA has a wonderful, huge number of kids that are actually living on agricultural land and doing agriculture. Very it has a large FFA, but it stretches the world that I grew up with in agriculture. I mean, just as an example, it, you know, and I really am just claiming to have a strong opinion on this, but there's some side of that that is always happening. And the buffer is a nice little buffer, but it's really not in the place to drive through.
Yep. It's a huge area where the farming is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where what I call farming sprawl
and there are still many, many housing available options there in the Haines Preserve and at Hale, that is feasible. We're talking not just people, we're talking. So they haven't even started developing that. And that's what I see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad this morning we go.
Yeah, and
that cooperative that is in that blue corner, that little blue corner in the southeast corner, beautiful. So just out of that is a blue box. That's where the cooperative is. I understand that, right? Now, or is in that light section that Murray has. Mm-hmm. They haven't developed all their lots yet. They haven't sold them all. They're in the process of it. They're starting to. Build, I'm watching it out there.
44.
So we continue to build up there. We're going to have more traffic in the George Washington Harbor into the Cameron School, into the Arts and Media. That's the shortcut to get to the interstate, which is a good one. And it is becoming the issue. And those houses haven't even been built yet. It is a problem now. We're seeing an increase in the traffic. So these are my concerns with the sprawl that I see in that show.
Mm-hmm.
So are you leaning in the direction of the end?
Well, this is kind of a problem. Because we already have so much land that is serviceable for commercial development that's not even sold at that lot, why should we continue to own more when those have not been sold in yet? This is what I call urban sprawl. We keep on growing more, but we don't fill in the green, the land that we have surrounding it. I'm more convinced of that. This is how I see urban sprawl. Continue to go on up, but we still have land pretty close to the city that's not developed, and still have land that has been set aside for development within the city limits. That blue is the city limits.
There's reasons they don't develop or take small parts. Development period of dollars. Hard to argue with the open market on where people will go to it.
And I'm not that. I don't want to. I think I'm going to make a different housing. Both don't like the people when they don't have to have it. Stay close to the city. And that is what I know is the housing. It's smart, rural, within close to the infrastructure already of the city. As they keep on going north to Gilbert, Gilbert coming south to Haines, but there's still pockets within closer to Haines that I believe is creating in that northwest sector.
If you want to go that direction, we can. Of just the complete buffer, but just at the end of the day, for my own knowledge, is that worth, as I bring this to both Ames and Gilbert, is that worth not having a fringe plan at all? Over.
Mm-hmm. What did the farmers say
there? The Finchams came to one of the meetings. They didn't have a lot of comments.
There's one huge.
Yeah, and again, you know, for this area to annex, it would take someone selling land or asking to me.
What's farmland within cities that's annexed? They bring up farmland into the city to farm the land.
Yeah. All over.
Yeah.
I mean, we can definitely go that direction. If both cooperators say no, I can come back and let you know. But otherwise,
okay. Gilbert's already asking for sole control over it.
Okay.
To me, this is a little bit of a give and take. Allows for a little bit of an expansion. It says the landowners want, but it does limit the word that cut in half.
Okay. Right.
You got better.
That's true. Okay. The other piece of this would be we've always cut off Gilbert at the Ames 2 mile mark. So we have 170th, and so we mapped Gilbert's urban growth area south of 170th. But in their comp plan, it actually goes north of 170th, and then it creates issues. Like, I just got a phone call last week where, what's the process to go through north of 170th if you want to build in Gilbert? I just think we need consistent policies. So my recommendation would be to include their urban growth area as shown in their comprehensive plan fully in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, so we just have consistent policies so the county can more easily defer to Gilbert in terms of their growth in that area.
That purple in the southwest corner, is that what Gilbert is proposing?
Yep. And the tan colors too. Yep. So right now in the fringe plan draft, it's mapped like that up to 170th. And so basically we just carry it a half mile north of that point to match their comprehensive plan. So it really wouldn't be that much more added, but you're right. It is, it's quite large right now. It goes down to 180th. Oh, sure. Yeah. And then we can talk about conditional
use. Okay. 6 o'clock.
Great.
So
Okay. I think I already touched on this. The only other point I will bring up is that county cannot regulate agriculture, right, under county zoning. So, again, cannot. We're not allowed to. So, really, the research farms, I don't know what impact would have from a zoning perspective. I mean, the fringe plan isn't county zoning either, but for what it's worth. And then again, our recommendation was to, you know, take the research farms out as annexable. You all have some questions about that, so maybe we'll discuss it some more at the end. Okay. Conditional uses. This is another one where I'm going to give some background on what a conditional use permit is, even though these come to you guys all the time. So a conditional use is not the same as a use that's permitted by right as a principal permitted use in a zoning district. Think single-family dwelling in the A1 agricultural district. A conditional use is a use that someone can request and can be granted if it's considered to be compatible. Sometimes we need conditions to ensure it's compatible with an area, but it's not a use permitted by right. There's a process you have to go through that involves your commission and the Board of Adjustment. A strategy in the draft plan is after the plan's adoption to review our zoning code. You all probably know this is on my work program anyway. To look at conditional use permits and what conditional use permits we're allowing, specifically in the A1 agricultural district. Do you want to fast forward a few slides? That one. Thanks. Some of these uses over the years have flagged my, you know, just my with my planner hat on, questioning, you know, is a, you know, adult use, a sexually oriented business really appropriate in the A1 agricultural district? Should we be allowing a conditional use permit for that? So when we started the plan review process, you know, the city of Ames also had some of those questions, not in terms of what's compatible with A1 agricultural zoning, but what's compatible with areas they might grow in the future, which is where this list came from. I feel that there's a lot of overlap there, though. So it's proposed that we would review our zoning code to look at removing these as options of conditional uses in the urban reserve and urban growth areas. Yes. So, and we can get more specific. But breeding and boarding, and, you know, that one was one I flagged. We've got, you know, several boarding operations that you can hear from a half mile away. They're pretty large, and breeders, too. But, again, we can work with this list and come back to the other cooperators with an amended list, which is something that staff's recommending. Again, the conditional uses that are proposed to be limited, some of these really impactful uses like kennels and shooting ranges that are loud. Some might be uses that take up, you know, a large amount of area, so it would make it inefficient for a city to run infrastructure through, right? So I think that's more where beyond the, you know, impact of a use on a residential neighborhood, thinking about is it efficient for a city to run infrastructure through like a very large campground, for instance. Does that make sense from a density perspective? Let's see. So then there's lodges and fraternal organizations, which is kind of in that same camp, power plants and substations, drag strips, salvage yards, yard waste composting, ag lime storage and processing. Event venues is on here again because of the traffic and how that would work with a future residential neighborhood. The impacts of having events, you know, later at night, that kind of thing. That used to be bed and breakfast, but staff is recommending clarifying that we don't have an issue with a bed and breakfast and its compatibility with future city growth or rural areas. It's more concern about larger event venues.
Then we need more bed and breakfast.
Yeah. And then landfills is on here, as well as commercial wind and solar. And those, again, are just uses that take up a really large land area that's really hard for a city to absorb and put residential or other growth near. Surface mining, so gravel pits and indoor recreational facilities, that is another one that could generate a lot of traffic. Think, oh, what's the one down in Ankeny? There's a trampoline park, right? Yeah. So is that appropriate in a rural area? I also question that one.
Is this an action that is apart from the urban fringe?
It would be after the fringe.
Okay.
So
we're moving the conditions out of the urban fringe.
We are still gonna have, you know, with a plan, there's after action steps highlighted in a plan. And so this is an after action step that's listed in the draft plan. I'm not proposing to remove it as an after action step, but limiting county zoning like this has to be done separately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If there is an existing use, and I know there are, that has a conditional use permit that's in one of these categories and they want it to be expand, that would be limited because they'd be legal nonconforming. And that limits expansions. It also limits if something was destroyed beyond 60% of its market value by, you know, a tornado, couldn't be rebuilt. I have seen other jurisdictions include a conditional use permit for an expansion of a non-conforming use. So that could be something we could add to this list as something we'd like to add to our code. The other part of this is even if these aren't possible through conditional use permits, you can still request a rezoning to have one of these uses. And that is just a more robust process that requires us to take a better look at compatibility with existing and future land use.
That was going to be my question. While there is an alternative.
Yes, because then we'd be looking at, is this area truly appropriate for rural commercial use, for instance, in the event of, you know, a shooting range? It's not, yeah. I think there's less presumption, and we have to consider a broader range of uses that could be allowed in the commercial zoning district through a rezoning process. It's not just a shooting range at that point. It's any number of other general commercial uses. So are there any on here that you'd like to further discuss, ask the other cooperators to remove from the list?
Clarify again. So this is the list that will be presented as an yes. And it's a very specific list at this point. So you're asking for input either on not doing it or doing it or limiting the number of things.
I'd say more so on limiting the number of things. I can take it, input of any sort. I will say that if we're going to be requesting limiting annexation ability in the urban reserve, that this is a pretty big bargaining point for that. Because if we remove any limitation on conditional uses in the urban reserve, then why do we even have urban reserve that's not annexable? It's just ag farm service at that point. Does that make sense? So if we're reducing the annexable area of the urban reserve and the only other restrictions on the urban reserve are regarding divisions and conditional use permits, and now we're allowing the same division possibilities in ag farm services urban reserve, the only thing left making that urban reserve is these conditional uses. So at that point, we just have ag farm service. And some limitations on the process to request a new residential subdivision. So, yeah, we could talk about not doing this, but that's my perspective on it.
Just throwing out one of them, the private aircraft landing field. On my property in the prairie, my family farm in Missouri. What is an alternative to that?
It'd be a rezoning. Yeah. And again, some of these are commercial in nature, I'd say. I'd have to look at the specific definition to see if this is all private aircraft landing fields or private as in private commercial aircraft landing fields.
So you're not. This may be like commercial. Mm-hmm. Not specifically talking about somebody being in a flying club.
I need to look at the definition in our code, and that's something we would do with this amendment process. Yeah.
This is within the
2 miles
of the
urban. This is just in those urban reserve areas and urban growth. No, I think we'd do something more tailored where the chapter would specifically reference those designations in the fringe and say these uses are not something that's allowed through a conditional use permit process in these designations in the fringe.
And a lot of these are things that it doesn't make sense to have within 2 miles of the city.
Yeah.
You don't want a landing trip.
Yeah.
You don't want
I know. A few, but not like a larger. Because again, those uses require a significant setback, and it is hard to site dense residential uses around something that you should probably have a setback at least as tall as the wind turbine on. I'm not sure who wants to live next to them.
And I'm kind of hung up on the lodging and the indoor rec.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
You were saying specifically about the indoor facility? Yeah, the tidbit I might take an action on to be lodges in internal organizations and indoor residents. Lodges in internal organizations and indoor residents. You're thinking of watching hanging in the
yeah, it's trapped in for
I'm just looking at my reasoning on my notes, sorry.
My thinking on why the indoor recreation facility should stay on this list is because it generates. It's not coming up a score or a monster. It's going coming up. It generates a lot of traffic. That was on the gravel road. Hopefully, it won't be on gravel road, but it will generate a lot of gravel steps for this area of people that were living on that road. They're going to take karate class. There's 20 families that are taking karate class. My kids, all of them are families. Generally, coming in there from 7 to 8, another group. That'd be something to consider for. Regarding lodges and paternal organizations, I think lodges are already out there. And I agree with you. There's not one, at least in this day and age, you know, years ago. I don't personally.
I think both of those would be fine to eliminate. I don't think we're going to have an issue with the other cooperators on them. And again, most of the comments were on bed and breakfast. And so we have clarified that that would be event venues. Yeah. So I think that's because bed and breakfast was on there because you can request a conditional use permit to have a bed and breakfast and do an event venue with that, which is a much easier process than doing a rezoning in a rural area just to have a commercial spot for a wedding venue. We get a lot of requests for bed and breakfast, actually, because of the event venue allowance. Yeah.
Right now, they're...
Mm-hmm. Right now, they're combined. So we could look at removing event venues from that option, making it its own separate option with supplemental standards and limiting it in some way, or just requiring a rezoning for that type of use.
At this point, my opinion is that bed and breakfast are pretty much a need. And so are the advanced venues, but that is an impact, a much bigger impact than a bed and breakfast. Some bed and breakfasts are just out.
Absolutely.
So, just our family, they
okay. Yeah, I think in my experience with conditional use permits that generate a lot of traffic, what comes to mind is YSS. So what happened there is it's on a gravel road, you know, half a mile in either direction from a paved road. We did a traffic impact study, requires that to be submitted. Of course, there aren't any traffic improvements required. It is a rural road that sees 70 vehicles daily, typically, and we're increasing it by 100. That's not going to warrant a turn lane or paving or anything like that. So the only recommendation we could make was dust control. And that's typically when we get a conditional use permit in. On a gravel road, it's something that's going to generate a high amount of traffic. If the road has such a low amount of traffic in the first place, we're really just going to end up with condition on dust control.
But the traffic is still changing.
Yes.
The nature of that.
Yeah, my point again was I know we require traffic studies for these kinds of things, but on rural gravel roads, they don't amount to much except dust control. So did you say lodges and fraternal organizations, and that's it? I know we're going to vote at the end. I just want to make sure. Okay, great. Okay, great. Okay. What, and I don't think this has to be fringe pen related. One thing we could look at when we do an amendment to this code section is traffic generation cutoff for when you need to go seek a rezoning instead of a conditional use permit. That would probably solve that problem. That's the event venue. That was what we... Sure. He provided several written comments and spoke, yes.
May 23rd public meeting comments transcript. He was very gracious. He says fringe plan is a good thing. It's good to know where the development's going to happen. He's not anti getting COVID. He just wants, if I understand what he's saying, he just wants to be able to have his venue in Southwest East. So again, if you have a map, he is right very close to Boone County. And he's off of that. And so, as a bed and breakfast, he's been fighting this for years.
Clarify a separate lawsuit. From a neighbor.
And me. Anyway, so his suggestion, change the fringe plan to 1, get rid of the restrictions on conditional use. But in the country, I don't have a problem with them. We really need to have 17,000 acres.
Yep, and I think that's something we have talked about, and that's why we're recommending limiting the annexable portions of that.
Take care of that.
Yeah.
Regarding restrictions, which is what we're talking about, and I think what Mr. Perkins would like to do is put in a campground and possibly setting venue. Exactly what's going to deal with him. Yeah. I take it he doesn't have a conditional use rate.
He does. We can,
Well, we vote on everything. We have agreed. We have to wrap my head around this specific thing. It's not a good framework where we can
I think amongst yourselves with staff, yes, and then we can take public comments after.
Like, later?
Well, if you've got questions.
No.
Oh, okay.
My concern is making an exception and the event.
Oh, it's not going away. It would be non-conforming or require a rezoning request. And again, one of the recommendations you could make is to add a new conditional use permit that allows expansion of non-conforming conditional uses. Right? Because they're a non-conforming use, and the point of a non-conforming use is that they go away. But that would be a recommendation. And we could, when we get into this ordinance process, get more nuanced into that. No, but I just wanted to get you all that option of we could do something else to help those non-conforming conditional uses. To allow rebuilding if something happens, some very limited expansion. Yeah, and
you can write that in.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. I think we're almost done. So this one is the designation that would allow new rural subdivisions, rural residential expansion. We haven't mapped any of this area. You have to request an amendment to the fringe plan to map it. You have to meet these standards I've laid out here, which include limiting the amount of new rural residential lots created. And I'm not talking about acreages here. I'm talking about rural subdivisions like Cameron Estates on County Line Road and Cameron School Road. This, again, isn't acreages. Another standard would be having them locate on paved roads, and then just, again, considering how much we've already approved in the past. And what staff did is we took the Story County Housing Study, projected a need for new rural residential development over the next 20 years. And so staff took that number and applied the number of building permits issued in the fringe to it, and then further applied the number of building permits issued in the fringe in rural subdivision lots to that number to create a ratio to come up with a recommendation of 60 new lots within the next 20 years in these rural subdivisions in the fringe. So the comment we got on that was that it was too restrictive. And the standards were also too restrictive. And I would recommend as staff, we could get rid of the standard that says no more than 40 acres of land in agricultural production. Maybe request it to be amended to this designation. That was a standard that I had proposed to try to limit the scale of these. But I do understand that in order to have stormwater retention and appropriate roads, and really in order to build on the most appropriate parts of a site, we might want to allow more land to be amended so that we could, let's say there's a grassed waterway through the middle of a 40-acre piece, and we're not allowing amendments of the 20 acres on either side of that, but those would be much better building sites and not put this grassed waterway in someone's backyard. Then maybe we should allow some more flexibility there. So that's the next slide, is that recommendation. And just some more information on how staff came up with that 60-lot number. I can take questions on that. The other part of this is we're recommending all fringe plan amendments, including to this rural residential expansion area, only be considered twice a year. So if you submit in January to June, we'd have them all heard in June to December, we'd have them all heard in December. And that's a change from the current plan. where they can be heard, you know, anytime. And it's really helpful for this one, so we can consider rural residential subdivision requests at the same time, so we can better understand cumulatively what's being requested, and kind of weigh the most appropriate one being requested against the others. Lot. Yes. Yep. The demand's high, but the demand is high. You'd have to request to apply it. Yeah, in the fringe plan, yeah, to apply it.
Why are we wanting to?
Because beyond, you know, just the number of lots we've seen over the years and the traffic impacts, especially in the fringe area, you know, I don't know if rural residential subdivisions, while there's demand, that's high for those. I don't know if the need's there. We should be focusing on, you know, mid-range housing types, and you just can't get that in the county when our minimum lot size is 1 acre. I mean, a 12,000 square foot lot sells for so much, you can't put less than a $250,000 home on it. Okay. Yeah, that's true too. Or, yeah, focusing on areas where we can create smaller lots, like in cities. I think the other issue we've seen is, you know, when we're approving really large rural residential subdivisions right outside of a town, you know, that, for instance, Maxwell has trouble getting a developer even for an 8-lot subdivision inside of town. It's just easier to develop in the county, and it costs less. And I don't know if it's the housing type that the county comprehensively needs when we're looking at our small communities, too. Yeah.
How many buildable lots are there right now that are in the county, building in that village, that are buildable, that wouldn't demand?
I would estimate there's 300 to 400 35-acre pieces of land without dwellings on them in the fringe that you could
over
35 acres.
Over 35 acres that someone could find to build there.
One house.
Without having to go into
it.
There's 60 vacant lots in the fringe right now.
Yep,
and that's for all rural subdivisions. So that might be owned by an adjacent property owner, though. But they might not sell it. But that's the count I came up with. I think the other part of this is, you know, they are far out from town. You know, city doesn't want them in this urban reserve area, so they're getting farther away. And as we're thinking about, you know, climate change, what's that do with vehicle miles traveled? It increases them. It's just not the most sustainable form of development either.
wonder with the quality of life issues that come with living in the country, whether you're living really wealthy subdivision. The depreciation of that property is faster because well water is a growing problem. It has a high yield on the acreage that that initially, you know, the buildings there. And the produce don't come in. But people are hitting the stuff they don't know.
Yeah,
we're putting a lot of money into that.
Yeah, I think the other point on that would be, if you're driving around and you see an acreage that seems in line with the county's rural character question, when we see these larger subdivisions keep popping up on, you know, Cameron School Road, for instance, is that really within the county's rural character? It's also some sort of aesthetic or judgment call on what we think is appropriate for rural Story County to look like now and 20 years from now. We did get a lot of comments that you're just going to push growth into Boone County. But that's, you know, short term, long term, what do we want the county to look like?
It was, to me, notable that there were the subdivisions and their point of view, and the point of view of
Yeah, and it'd just be based on if we got any requests in. That's true. Mm-hmm. We could look at quarterly. No.
I don't allow anywhere, now that I can look at it every 6 months, and it's very anti. Yeah. Development of these very highly thought out. Everything that I'm seeing for information is successful, it's what Marsh wants to do. It's like, this is what absolutely needs to be in the plan, it's what you're fighting for.
In your house, how many people would prefer a house over 500,000 versus the
1,774 needs for housing. 500,000 level. So due to the math, that's 17%. I'm wondering if we're in a smaller type of people.
You can't build a small chain of houses. Just only 300,000 houses down there from the 90s. So what people want for new houses is something big and more expensive. And they're coming from that smaller house. In order to provide a $300,000 house, you build a $500,000 house. And just to move into that, buy the older.
So in that case, if they want to buy, their subdivision houses that are already marked that aren't even plotted. I mean, they're plotted on people, but they have.
Think for average produce, especially one more in the county, because all the development of course, are names, but in 50 years, you still have a lot there. So it's terribly expensive and slow within the city to get nice money.
I think this is what, like me, we're in the planning and zoning. How do we keep the world, you know? And yet, someone wants to live in the world. But most of us looking at all our kitchen windows and have lived there for 20 years. I had to read it several times when the classification of rural residential, because automatically it comes to mind, you know, myself on an acre, what a homestead, you know. And it isn't really what it's going for. So, I mean, suggestions or ways to make it easier to talk to have a second home on a property for family. That there's been some request for that. But
not really enough. How much? Too low and then one. So now you're not helping your affordability. Now you just may have one people in twice. I guess that was too.
Yeah. And I we're starting to talk about affordability here, and I want to emphasize that affordable housing in the county in an unincorporated area is really hard to make work. It's simply because of transportation options, because of our minimum lot size options, because you have to maintain your own septic system, right? There's a lot of barriers there.
I think that's what people want to live, but that there is more housing in the county, but it doesn't mean that it's 50.
Yeah, and I think there, you know, for instance, we're talking about affordable housing, but we can look at that from a perspective of actual, like, subsidized housing, too, and there are efforts. You know, I've got two Habitat for Humanity houses being built down the street from me inside the city. They're redeveloping the old middle school property into 30 to 40 lots, too. Right. Yeah.
It's not real. Good, okay. But this is real. This that works.
But that's
a lot of permits.
Yeah.
This is, no. I mean, but the subdivision, I mean, I see what you mean about, okay, the people that can afford that will move out and open up the houses, and are those houses going to suddenly depreciate? It's a real problem, and I'm not sure that accepting it as a problem is the way to handle that part. I think that the affordable housing
so long, and it's big part because of the university. I mean, that's where the university towns are the places where there's a race before the town.
Come back to what we're actually talking about here. The we have no rule of residential based on that. I don't know what the 60 thoughts were that
That's for us to consider when we're reviewing these requests. So, because a lot of the time when we get, you know, conceptual development plans, then it's one subdivision with 40 to 60 lots. And so what truly is it's a need. I recognize that you're saying there's more demand, but I'm talking about actual need based on a variety of housing types and projections. What is our need to focus on these? For rural acreages, it subdivisions, yeah. Because I guess in rural subdivisions, is that what you're saying?
Well,
because the 60 doesn't include the acreages.
Just
subdivisions.
But lower down here, you're saying.
Well, we make it really hard in the fringe to build on an acreage, right? Because you can't divide your property in most fringe plan designations in the current plan. You'd have to build on the full 35 acres. And that's... No, we've opened up flexibility for the acreages in allowing reductions in lot sizes.
Okay, what 160 acres could go down to 440?
No, it could go down to 1 acre, for 1 acre lots, and the rest could remain in farmland. Yeah, 1 and 5. What acres?
In the current
fringe plan.
We need to put a number of targets.
Yeah, because we're looking to recommend a target to hit for Story County, so we're not just approving 70 lot subdivisions after 70 lot subdivisions. You know, we need some sort of guidance in what's the appropriate amount. The Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Supervisors and staff. So when I get a conceptual review application in and it's for 40 houses, I can say, well, maybe 8 would be more appropriate. And putting the rest in an easement as farmland.
Think of all these other rural subdivisions that are now important for them. And what happens when the city is coming out there and you can be in it? And the farther out, then how far does the city have to grow out into their infrastructure out to get these parcels? That's why it'd be nice to keep it to reserve. And there is a lot of spotted land that is able to be built on. I think it was
Which my concern is just keep on sprawling out and becoming a chemical, and it's not regarding infrastructure of the city, we need it not a way or this is what I'd like to see not so many rural positions is at all possible in culture already incorporated, bringing. No, he is, you know, Kelly. The median, but the development now is poor. They aren't developed. The developers aren't developed.
The application for these models is underscoring that it makes these desirable communities as well. We're not just the sure, 16 townships, really beautiful communities that don't want to see their families, you know, immediate and no one come back in the township. We encourage these other towns to grow up. These are, you know, becoming the local right now. No wonder, from what I've been reading, how do we encourage developers to consider and people with a team? And like, I really think this great city is really cool. I would love to read my internet industry, which is great.
And I'm sorry, my understanding is that people are speaking those out. There's no housing sales, sometimes there's not a single
alternative. Yeah, I think the housing study addresses that question. We're working on an implementation matrix right now that'll provide a lot of technical assistance in terms of county staff resources and financial resources and looking at hiring a housing planner to assist our small communities in, you know, getting pre-approved site plans together and assessing their infrastructure capacity and creating a code enforcement position to make sure that housing doesn't get into a state of disrepair and we're losing existing housing stock. Yeah. Yeah, and quite honestly, you know, I don't want to create a scenario where we've created so many limitations in the fringe that now we're just going right outside the fringe. So I think, yeah, so that's why at the end of this process, we've got one last chapter of our code to amend, which is Chapter 87 subdivision regulations to adopt some similar minimum levels of service countywide for rural subdivisions.
Yeah, I've already done 6 months here, and I've already done 6 months here.
And we can, I can look at that, the 6 month thing. Well, I do understand the contract thing, thinking it did incentivize agricultural buyers. Yeah, can't. No developer would close on a, well, maybe speculatively on a property. Yeah. Yeah. Other comments that we need to address? Some parcels were outside of Ames's 2 mile buffer, and that was a mistake. So we're removing the properties that were mapped outside of the 2 mile area. That was just a mapping error. We probably need to allow the reconfiguration of lots for commercial purposes as well. So let's say somebody wants to build a church in the unincorporated area and a property designated as urban reserve. They don't want to build on the full 35 acres. We need to allow some sort of reconfiguration for that. That was an oversight. We'll be writing that policy. And then there were a lot of comments from folks that live near Martin Marietta about dust and noise. You know, we're going to look at our conditional use permits chapter. We could look at, we have supplemental standards for mineral extraction. We could look at those and those comments at that point. There's nothing in the fringe plan that I can really do about those issues because those are really county zoning issues. But they're good to know.
Any people commented about the east side highway 35, and if I understand what they were writing about, mostly in emails, but they would like these not to be considered.
Yeah.
So if these were not considered, maybe that would take a lot of
urban reserve, yeah.
Yeah, that would take a lot of urban reserve total acreage number down.
Mm-hmm. And again, those are areas that I think my recommendation would be to work with cities to still map them as urban reserve, but not allow annexation. I think there's a lot of wiggle room in those areas for that. Yeah, and I didn't. Yeah, I didn't get that specific. You could in your recommendation. I did not. I just left it open to have staff work with the cooperators, but that's certainly how it could be turned out. But if you wanted to specifically tell staff and the other cooperators, east of 35, no annexation. Yeah. But,
I can personally tell you that.
Yeah. Everybody has to agree.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, some people were commenting that 17,000 acres of urban reserve is too much. So one way to cut that down is,
yeah, I think a more nuanced way to do that would not necessarily at that dividing line, but thinking about how city sewer actually works from these urban growth areas, what could actually be served, and then limiting it from there. It probably end up, you know, not crossing the Skunk River, and then there's like a tributary on the northeast side.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd probably end up west of that, yeah.
Even that we could bring forth for it instead of further model.
Yeah, and
we have to consider the whole thing. We have to consider where we're getting the most feedback.
Yep, and that's how we've written the recommendation, to say we want you to focus on areas where growth can actually happen and leave those as annexable, not the entire urban reserve. I think that's it. I've got all our recommendations on the slide.
We don't have to go through this. What other questions?
I guess through the process, then, since we did have public comments, that we should do that.
Unless there's other questions for staff or things in the comments that I didn't touch on that you have questions about.
So would it be appropriate to allow some questions of staff after public comments?
Sure.
From a few staff, yeah, but public needs to adjust. But given that, we have a 3-minute and state your name and do you have a timer?
Do you want a time?
Okay, I'm gonna be firm on the limit of time, so I don't want to cut it off here until we're ready to go.
I'll ball up a piece of paper and just throw it at me. That's okay.
I promise to get your attention. All right. Are we ready? Okay.
Excellent. Doug Moore. I am Franklin. I'm elected Franklin Township trustee. I'm here on behalf of Franklin Township. First of all, I'd like to commend the chair for allowing public comment and doing so in a way that is compliant with Iowa state law. And I hope you didn't take the comments from the peanut gallery the wrong way. We were trying to prevent that from happening. It's a very murky subject, so well done. Second, I'd like to commend the staff on the formatting and the layout of the fringe plan, which was released to the public. Although there are things that we disagree with, it was a very well formatted, it's an easy document to understand. I will make a technical note though, some of the information that was presented today is not congruent with what is posted on the agenda website. One glaring difference is that bed and breakfasts were still listed as a non-allowable use, and that's the public document or the source document. So just a note, my guess is that's a technical problem. So if you would, can you pull up the 180 to 190th Street comments or the slide there that had the colors related to it? Forget, it was one of the first ones. Keep going. Right there. Just as a point of correction. Okay, just as a correction, this is not in the city of Ames currently. This is future city of Ames. There is a pre-agreement with the golf course that they agreed to be annexed by the city if that does happen. I believe that one of the committee members asked her or made the comment that was in the city. That is not. That is in Franklin Township. Right. Again, that is in – can I reclaim my time? I always love it when they say that. That is – so just to be clear, that is not in the city of Ames. That is Franklin Township as it stands right now. So I'll be very brief about our objections. There are a lot of good things in the fringe plan as proposed. The issue that we have is that the urban reserve and the now disallowed conditional uses – are devastating to economic development in the rural parts of the county, particularly Franklin and Washington Township. Everything that, almost everything you can imagine someone wanting to do to run a business is now not allowed, and the urban reserve is very, very limiting in itself. Our request would be that the urban reserve classification or overlay, to use the right verbiage, is completely removed from the fringe plan, and that the conditional uses, that process not be changed whatsoever. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. As I mentioned, I sat on this board. Very rarely did we have a contentious conditional use request that came in front of us. And I would also say that particularly the adult uses, that is an incredibly slippery slope that the United States Supreme Court addressed in 1986. I believe it was the city of Renton, Washington. Boom. How do they do, Cheryl?
Again. Playtime theater.
You got it. You got it. Thank you.
I got a few points, and Connie said she's not speaking. She said it better than mine.
I'm not allowing myself to do that.
I thought you said that when you talked to me.
No, I suggested that if you needed to talk more than 3 minutes, that you arrange for somebody else to continue your response.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. Sorry. Okay. Lisa Danielson, you want to ask, 2981 South Dakota. Josh. Okay. We've been told that we don't have a fringe plan, Ames will go crazy with annexation. If that were true, if they could do that, why do they want a fringe plan? This fringe plan makes zero new buildable lots, zero. Even if you can divide off for 1 to 5 acre lot, that does not create any new lots, okay? The rest of it's not buildable. Meadow Glen can be protected by code with a 50-foot stretch of land. That'd be 50 foot that leads to it to keep them from being annexed. Then they don't have to go into the city, which will provide them no services. So you need to know that. The way to protect Southwest Ames is to put us in Ag and Farm Service, and then we won't be annexable, and the Champlin Farm and the Whirly Creek area would be protected. It's surrounded by Iowa State land. The bargaining chip of conditional uses is a huge bargaining chip to Iowa State or to Ames. When the only suggestion to take out annexable land, ISU and the land west of the railroad between 180th and 190th, that's nothing. Iowa State's not going to do anything anyway. You're bargaining with nothing. You're giving Ames everything they want. The reserve is not to reserve and preserve the land. It's a reserve for Ames. It's a reserve. They don't want conditional uses because if a successful business is there, they're not going to want to sell out and be developed. That's what this is about. Okay, the traffic you're talking about with conditional uses, that comes up with a conditional use permit. If the county doesn't want to approve it, they don't have to approve it. Then you do not have to give this name. You do not have to. Everybody should have a right. And then when you do give conditional uses to AIM, you make people's property non-conforming. And if they have a successful business, the Perkins with Raspberry Hill, they can't grow it. And if it gets destroyed, they can't rebuild it. Don't do that. Don't give that to AIM. The county has the right, and you have the right to approve or disapprove of permits, and then leave people who already have them alone. So that's all. Did I do it within 3 minutes? I have some good points, I think.
Take your name and your address to the public record, by the way.
I'm the peanut gallery from the back. Phil Isevely, I live at 3108 South Dakota Avenue. I live right on Whirly Creek in the bottom. If you go down R38, as soon as you get down the bottom of the hill, that's where we live. Got an earth sheltered home there we've had since 1985, but I've lived in the area since 1975, just up the top of the hill. Anyway, a couple of issues. First of all, comments about the creek and straightening Whirly Creek. The City of Ames in 2004 spent $60,000 to do an environmental impact study for the creek. They were originally citing Norris study that was up at Onion Creek. Anyway, the bottom line is the creek, and then there was another study done by Mimi Wagner in the Landscape Architecture Department about stream erosion and all that kind of stuff done in 2011, and she strongly recommends that study be revisited, and all the professors that did the studies on the Whirly Creek issue in 2004 also recommend that it needs to be revisited. Bottom line is the environmental and the flora and fauna that are in the creek right now or at that time are highly valued, and it's a very unique area. Straightening the creek, it was done in the 1930s by the two residences that were out there, the Ballantines and the Rosses. I can take you onto my property today and show you where they did this 90-degree turns, and there's one right on our place where big oak trees have eroded over the years because of the slippage of the 90-degree turn, and I'm right behind Leonard Larson's house. He's not here right now. He's left. Same thing going on. Creeks in the Midwest are meandering. Creeks that are in the West, in the Rockies, those are creeks that dig, that go down. That's why you have the Grand Canyon out there, and we don't have the Grand Canyon here. Just look at the Platte River. Anyway, my point there is that if the creeks, straightening the creek is not the solution, absolutely not. I think when it comes right down to it, it shouldn't be even considered. And then it was already stated that a 50-foot strip could be put along the Flummerfelt or whatever, Chaplin property, to keep Meadow Glen out. People that live in Meadow Glen are on large lots. They are not going to divide their lot. It's not going to happen. As far as being sewer ready for the Chaplin, that is incorrect. They came up from South, from State Avenue, and it's stubbed up
the time.
Little creek, and that's it. It does not come within the footage. I'd also like to see, I want to make one more comment. Staff has made a ton of references to codes and laws and all this. The study needs footnotes so we know where to go look for these laws and codes and stuff she keeps citing.
Kim Christensen, 2985 South Dakota Avenue. The one thing we've been told a lot of, why do we need to have a fringe plan? I remember, I think, Ben, you had actually asked that in a meeting, and they came back and people are saying, well, if we don't have a fringe plan, if we don't extend this, then we need to we can't control annexation because things will just come in and annex like crazy. It'll be chaos. If that were true, Ames wouldn't be so intent on having this fringe plan done if they were really had more power without a fringe plan than they had with one. So my question lies with that. If fringe plans are so important, how many fringe plans are there in Iowa? Have any of you reviewed any fringe plan in Iowa? I only know of one. And I don't know if you know more or not, Emily, This is the one in Johnson County. And you should read how it is. It's completely different. It nearly as convoluted and as super complicated as this one is becoming with overlays on top of overlays. We've got annexation overlays now on three different types of classifications. It's hard to even figure out what's going on there. From the standpoint of Washington Township, just to give you an idea of what that looks like, the Washington Township this is the land that's Iowa State is in red. The land in green is the reserve, which we're asking to have taken off. The interesting thing about the reserve is when you take away all of the value that could exist in that property by taking away conditional uses, lot splitting, the only way you can get your money out of it at some particular point is going to be to annex it. And if you want to destroy the environment and you want to destroy the agricultural value, have it annexed. Kelly's idea for Champlin, 3.5 to 5.5 houses per acre. In fact, it's actually got a zoning for mobile homes. The RS3 is the fact of the over here with the Meadow Glen is that fifth, that doesn't have to be. It can, even Champlin could be annexed without making that an island because you have that 50-foot buffer that can run the distance. And you know about that, right?
Yeah.
You didn't mention it today, but I know you know about it. So, I agree. I'm sorry. So that's kind of it. The last thing I got to say, I would like to invite you all to come on. We got a bus that we can take you all out on a tour of that area. We can show you what the Iowa State land is. We can show you what we did with the other people. So if you would like to have a tour, we'd love to take you on one all together. Thanks. And thanks for letting us speak. I do appreciate it.
Alex Christensen, 2984 South Dakota. I feel like we need more time. I feel like that was kind of an exhausting evening. It's 20 pages. It directly affects me, and I ran through it quickly, you know. So I feel like any decision tonight would be very rushed. I didn't even have a chance to look at the comments. I don't know how you could. They all have families and jobs. He touched on that, but the need for a fringe plan, I highly question. Iowa City has one. We don't necessarily want to be like Iowa City, do we? But even so, it's very different. I've read through a little bit, and it's far less restrictive than this one. Another concern I have, conditional uses were a big issue. I went to all three meetings, and a lot of people, not just protecting Brad's business, but people didn't want conditional uses on there at all. And so I'm concerned that the staff and taking that public input and coming back with this plan, they've removed one, bed and breakfast, but added three. So the public input was against conditional uses, but instead of listening to that, more were added. And I think she mentioned a case-by-case basis. Well, that's how it is now. You know, you can plead your case and you can say, well, the shooting range, I think, is on there for shock value, if looked at first. But, I mean, I think you could plead your case. They say, oh, yeah, we want to have it. You can say no. You know, you can say that doesn't make sense, that doesn't fit. You don't have to allow the conditional use. So just leave it as it is. Don't have any of it. I mean, and especially Brad, I mean, I thought he was trying to protect his business, but his bread and butter is the event center. I mean, that's what he has is events and weddings. But I think that's a good thing. So, my point.
Hi, I'm Becky Christensen, 2985 South Dakota Avenue. Wasn't really prepared, so I'll just mention a few things. One is, I think there are a lot of churches that hold weddings, which brings in a lot of traffic, and they're right in the city of Ames. I've heard people complain about the Plex being out in the fringe area. That is a community center, and a lot of people enjoy that facility and the activities that are available there. We live very close to All Iowa Tech. They have camps, a lot of traffic in and out. We're close to the Sukup Basketball Center, you know, the practice facility. I mean, look around Ames. There are a lot of event centers in Ames. And, of course, there's traffic. But why would it be any different out in the country? It doesn't make sense to me that that's such an issue. The other thing is I know that Ames has no control and no authority over conditional uses. So by our county making a big deal about that, we're just handing over control to Ames, and I don't see the point of that. I wanted to talk about the lot splitting. I understand that effort is being made to try to make it easier for people to get a mortgage on a smaller lot. I'm not sure why there would be a maximum of 5 acres. And the other part is, it's saying the other part is of the, you know, the part that split off is now an outlot, not buildable. Yet I have seen in a case that came up recently in the Board of Supervisors, it said that that outlot needs to be saved for developers. That makes no sense to me. The person who owns the property is not able to use that lot. We're going to save it for a developer someday.
I'd love an explanation for that. All I got. Thank you. Brad Perkins, 5500 240 Street, Raspberry Hill Bed and Breakfast. I'm going to try to address some of the things Debbie was asking about. Yes, we currently do have two permits, one for conditional use permit for a bed and breakfast with event center, and one for commercial campground. We received those in 2004. I'm sorry, we received them 4 years ago in 2018. I want to address the part here in the memo where it talks about proposed urban fringe plan and conditional use permits. Basically, it's saying that since we are in the urban reserve out there in that far west, southwest part that you were looking at, that this would make, the way this reads, it looks like this would make our business legal nonconforming. And I know you noticed the two little girls that were here earlier. This is a family business. I have long-term plans for this. I'm not here doing this for myself. The kids that mow the lawn have made more off this business in the last 4 years than we have. This is a long-term plan for a family. It clearly says in county code, legal nonconforming is one which would allow to continue, but is not encouraged. We would not encourage its long-term survival. I followed every law, every rule. I went through the conditional use permit process. It was lengthy. We had avid discussions about everything from water to the size of the building to the number of people. There is the conditional use permit process isn't like, oh, I fill out a form and I get stamped. The reason this board exists and the Board of Adjustment exists is to make sure that we follow the codes that the county has. And that's what we did. We have a legal business. Now, if another derecho, tornado, or good Lord, the average everyday Ames storm that happens every other week comes through and knocks down my pavilion, if I was nonconforming, is my business wiped out? Is all the work and effort and dollars and years and blood and sweat and tears suddenly worthless? Do I not get to rebuild? Well, that's what would happen. And what I would strongly suggest is that that southwest part doesn't need to be urban reserve. We're surrounded by Iowa State lands to the south and to the east and Highway 30 to the north. We have Boone County to the west. Put us in agricultural where it belongs. It's mostly row crops around us. And not only do we have a bed and breakfast, but we now have cows. We have pigs. We're trying to take that 80 acres and make it work as much as possible. That means making every dollar you can out of the capital that you have invested, which means, yes, bed and breakfast and events and weddings because people ask us for that constantly. It also means if my little girls want to raise a cow and a pig and ride their horse in the lot, great, they can do it. We are rural because we want to be, and there's no plans for a subdivision.
And I won't speak nearly the 3 minutes probably. My name is Connie Buss, and I live at 4453 246th Street. And in February 2020, the city took the Southwest Quarter out of their plan, and now they're putting it back in. And I really don't think that they have thought through that because we haven't changed anything out there. They don't need us. We need to be removed, put us back into agriculture, take care of all of that. If the city didn't want us in February of 2020, why did they put us back in there now? It's only for the developers, not for the benefit of the people that live there. And your comment at the beginning that there were only 20 people here out of 150 that were commented, I think probably all the comments or most of the comments were not pro of the fringe plan. I don't know anybody that is in the Southwest Quarter that would be benefited by that, and I would like you to reconsider how you would design that area for us and be supportive of us and hear about our rural community. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Baldus, and I live at 265th Street, which is south of the Ames Nursery at Gravel Road, south of the Ames Nursery off of 69. And I'm concerned about the fire protection that I will maybe miss. I have a question of that the figures up there, was that taking all of West Story's property taxes into consideration
or was that just the Meadow Glen, which seems to be the big problem here?
You want me to answer that? It was all of it.
It was all.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I'm concerned about is fire protection for my property. And I have a house over on South Dakota, too. Also, West Story services that. And I just want to make the comment that Ames has not been a very good partner or friend to people that live south of Ames. They just want to dump things on us. And it's been this way. And I feel like you need to take a really good look to see what you want to have Ames have the jurisdiction over as opposed to Story County. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gina Perkins, Brad's wife, 5500 240th, Ames.
What is it?
I'm supposed to say. Take us out of the Urchin Reserve. I don't do this publicly. I'm behind the scenes. He's my spokesman for our whole family. He's our cheerleader, and he does a great job. And I thank you for the opportunity to sit and be able to talk, because I see that that was not something we were going to be able to have done, and that is a freedom I do appreciate. I appreciate that you guys are here to listen. I appreciate we do have the community to support to say what we are living, because we have our boots on the ground, and that's something you guys don't get to live unless you hear it. So thank you for listening. I don't know of anything else but to say I'm grateful to be able to set the seat. Thank you.
Thank you. So now would be the time for discussion and questions of staff. Any further discussion?
I could write up a letter outlining the direction we've kind of discussed tonight and come back with it on the 3rd. And then take it to board supervisors from there. If you didn't want to take action this evening, you could remand it to the 3rd. And I'll prepare a memo outlining our discussion and a draft of a letter.
I'm looking at the conditional use. What is actually changing or not changing right in the draft process, right?
It's just changing what's listed in the draft. That's what this recommendation is. And so we need to, at the end of the process, amend the code, consider amending the code.
On that list is the initial uses that we would
need to consider removing as options. In the urban reserve, yeah. And urban growth.
That would not. That's for a future meeting.
And I think we talked about the non-conforming option. I won't touch on that again for conditional use permits.
Okay, condition on the south of 30, west of R 38 area.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. It's not shown as an immediate priority growth area in the 2040 plan or the fringe plan, but it is an area in the future if there was interest that city growth could occur in, which is why the urban reserve overlay has been applied. There are certain areas like the Champlin Farms property that could be more immediately served with infrastructure, but it's not the whole area. Well, that's zoning. Do you mean Ag Farm Service? That's something we could approach the other cooperators and request. You mean removing it as an annexation? Oh, moving it as an annexation. Yeah, I mean, you could request that. It is an area adjacent to the city, so. The part and point of the urban reserve is to ensure compatibility with.
What's the gap on the north side between the mine area?
Gosh.
Keeps the mine. Be like PEI or B. That welding area is.
I think that's Ag Farm Service. She's not showing up.
And where else we have to overlay?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no vision for future city growth in that area. Probably related to the mine.
Right.
And USDA. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think this map's even a little outdated. I think Martin Marietta is acquired to 35 at this point. So that could be a recommendation. Making it Ag Farm Service, you know, the urban reserve does ensure some sort of compatibility, even if we're not calling it annexable urban reserve for the southwest area. So you could recommend just remapping it as Ag Farm Service, but the other option would be just mapping it as unannexable urban reserve, so the southwest is just kind of preserved from incompatible, you know, rural subdivisions.
Would it be a change from everything?
Yeah, now it's shown as annexable.
But the land use currently
isn't. No. Well, right, but this is a, you know, I know that this is a planning horizon of 10 to 15 years, but we're looking really long term here and trying to prevent issues that we see now with, you know, existing rural subdivisions north of town that Ames doesn't even want to annex because we've got such a density up near Squaw Valley that that's just not an area they're going to grow into. And those were done in the 60s, you know. Yeah, we discussed that. That when we do the conditional use permit amendment, we could include a provision to allow rebuilding of non-conforming businesses as a conditional use permit. Like, you could go to a board and request it.
And could you, I think you brought it up in a previous meeting, but why is that 60%?
That's just the code. It's pretty standard across most cities and counties.
Has there been some degree of people, you know, using anything as a natural disaster or something? I mean, have there been ways that people have tried to manipulate that or something?
No, it's just a really, really standard provision for non-conforming uses because we don't want to encourage them to continue. So that's why that's there. And that's allowed. You can sell. Yeah. Under non-conforming uses, yeah.
And then it's still under that.
Yeah, and again, I want to emphasize that we are also discussing an expansion of non-conforming uses conditional use permit based on the comments. I am not recommending just a flat out, you know, no on these. I think that's something that maybe folks haven't heard this evening, even though we've talked about it a couple times. So I just want to reemphasize that. And that doesn't need to go in the plan.
When I see this notebook that I have from everything that you have mentioned to me, someone had to put this together. I want to have it for to say a great thank you. We see the voters, we see the moves, we see. I do not see the idea that you have had to work with the night, sleepless night that you guys have had to meet. So I want to say thank you.
That's on the first slide, Andrea.
I think fourth.
So we can either, basically, I can tell you what my notes say, and you can give me directions and move on to board supervisors based on this discussion, or August 3rd is your next meeting. I can write a summary and a letter that we take to board of supervisors, and you could vote at that point. And you want staff to bring back an example letter and memo.
So the motion is carried, and we appreciate staff providing.
That's good.
Yeah. Then moving on to comments from staff.
I don't have any. I had some, and I can't remember what they are. Thanks for listening and,
yeah,
and asking questions.
The commission comments, I'd like to thank staff for all their support, answering so many questions.
And I just thank staff as well and everybody here. helpful if we have a little bit more instruction.
That was my comment. Parliamentary procedure. Okay, sure.
I think maybe there's some concern of clarification on that.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Okay.
Because, of course, we talk to our neighbors.
Yeah.
And we need clarity on what to do when we do talk to our neighbors, or we do whatever. And we realize that you're not responsible for every neighbor that wants to talk to us.
Okay, we can do that next time.
No further comments. I think we need to adjourn.
Thanks.